Sacktown Sports Headlines.
With your Sacktown Sports headlines, I'm Simone Rickford. The Kings turned in one of their ugliest performances of the season last night, resulting in a loss to the Toronto Raptors at Golden 1 Center. The 113-95 loss notes the lowest scoring set from the Kings this year.
It ends up being a very disappointing night for Mike Brown's club. Final score is 113-95.
The two-time All-Star Domantas Sabonis also saw his 23-game double-double streak come to an end against the Raptors as the center finished the night with 9 points, 8 rebounds, and 4 assists. De'Aaron Fox tied his career high for technical fouls, 10, after getting teed up in the first half. If the guard receives 16 technicals, he'll be suspended for one game. The Kings will have to wash off the stink as they prepare for a 7-game roadie, beginning with a trip to Minnesota to square off with the Timberwolves at Target Center on Saturday night. The NBA All-Star starters will be announced at 4 p.m. this afternoon. Cattles and Rami are going to walk you through all the breakdowns of who's in and who's out, so don't go anywhere. I'm Simone. Those are your Sacktown Sports headlines. Raptors may have inked a blueprint to dismantle the Kings. Let's get into it right now on Cattles and Rami.
Cattles and Rami.
Cattles and Rami.
Cattles and Rami.
Sacktown Sports.
So as Simone just said, pretty ugly game last night for the Kings. And we wonder if the Raptors have built a blueprint for other teams to follow to slow down this Kings offense. Because last night, Rami, as crazy as this sounds, last night was only the second time this season that the Kings have scored less than 100 points.
That's pretty wild.
Only twice. And you really look at it, it was one bad quarter. They scored 17 points in the third quarter.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really difficult to come back from that unless, you know, you have a crazy quarter like you had on Monday, first quarter against Memphis, when you drop 47 and you can't miss from three. So only the second time under 100 points this year.
Maybe they should have kept them off TV. Like when they got on TV, all of a sudden they couldn't score the basketball.
Just leave them off,
just
right?
Just leave them off TV.
The Kings scored 45 points in the second half last night. 45 points, obviously not nearly good enough.
They had 47 in a quarter 3 nights ago.
Yep.
That's wild.
Yep. 47 points in the first quarter against Memphis, 45 points in the entire second half last night against Toronto. And it's very odd. This is unusual, right? We've come to expect this offense to just put up 115, 120, 125. When they score under 100, it feels weird. It's a very unusual happening. Again, only happened twice so far this season. Here was Malik Monk last night talking about the offense and the challenges they had.
Don't let the ball get stagnant when teams pressure us and switch. We'll watch the film on it and definitely learn from it.
So there was definitely some stagnation offensively last night from this team. And we've seen it in stretches, mostly when Domas is off the floor. Guys kind of try to figure out what they're supposed to do. I've been talking about that. We've been talking about that for several weeks now, the lack of an identity when Domas is on the bench. Mm-hmm. We saw it last night even when Domas was on the floor. Just this, all right, what are we supposed to do? What we usually do is not working. So when you look at the Raptors and what they did last night, Rami, is there any concern from you that they've kind of put this blueprint together for the rest of the NBA to follow?
Full disclosure and transparency.
Full disclosure and transparency.
I kind of brought this question to the table because I know that this is going to, when people see this happen, and Nick, we talk about the fact that Kings losses often look the same. You know what I mean? They have a lot of things in common. And inevitably, if we didn't bring it to the table, somebody was going to say, is the blueprint out there to beat the Kings? Whether it was after this Raptors loss or whether it was after another loss. And I always say, like, because this question comes up across the world of sports, across the board, you see this question come up when a team is hot and then they get cooled off. There's almost always a way to beat a team. You know what I mean? Because
everybody
has their weaknesses. Everybody has their strengths. Everybody has traps that they fall into. You know what I mean? And the Kings are no different when it comes to that. Yeah, there might be a blueprint out there. There might be a model out there. Can you recreate it? Do you have the players? Do you have the talent? Do you have the roster and the personnel to actually recreate what the Raptors did last night. You were talking in the first hour about how long and athletic a basketball team the Raptors are.
Yep.
Not every team can throw out a lineup or multiple lineups that are as long and as athletic as the Raptors are.
Correct.
The one thing I will say is, and it wasn't in that clip, but Malik Monk also talked about the physicality and the punching in the mouth that the Raptors did to the Kings, and especially early in that game. And he said that's something that's happened early in a number of games. That is something that, on some level, regardless of your skill level, your talent level, your personnel, if word spreads, hey, you get physical with these guys, you punch them in the mouth early, you can take them out of their game.
Yep.
That's something that teams can go out and do, and it doesn't really take necessarily a specific talent, a specific type of personnel. That's just a mindset of, hey, let's go out there, let's be physical with these guys, let's punch them in the mouth early and see how they respond. That, to me, of all the things that happened to the Kings is in last night's game, is the most recreatable model, if you will, to beat the Sacramento Kings.
We've seen that happen multiple times this year. We've seen it happen where teams have been physical with the Kings and the Kings have been able to, you know, respond at times, but most of the time, not so much. The physicality has absolutely bothered this team. When you look at them, they're not really a physical team.
No.
Like, on their roster, who would you say is physical? Obviously, Domas comes to mind right away, right? Fox is not physical. Herter's not physical. Keegan Murray is not physical. Mike Brown has talked about how Keegan has to understand he could be a little bit more physical and he's more athletic than he realizes and needs to, you know, kind of get into the paint more often. Keegan's not a physical player. HB is not overly physical. Anybody on the bench? Not really. I mean, Lyles can give you a little physicality dependent on matchup, but Metu's not overly physical. He's more athletic.
Yeah.
Monk, no. Davion's physical. He's just 5'11". He's not a big dude, but he's physical. There's really only like two or three guys on this team that I would say uncategorically are physical players.
Right.
And so when you go against a team that wants to punch you in the face, you have to be able to meet that level of physicality, which means you have to go outside of your comfort zone. And that's where you get the best of teams. Like, how you can beat teams is make them, hello, Captain Obvious, uncomfortable. So if you take them out of their comfort level and you force them to be physical, you inherently change the game they want to play. The other part I would say, to mention the length and how Toronto was built very specifically, and they are. There are only a few teams that you could look at and say might be able to do the same kind of thing. Memphis, when they're healthy, can give you physicality and some length, and they pester you, right? Wasn't the case as much Monday night, but they did not have Adams, which is a big part of that. Then you could also look at the Clippers because, you know, they're just full of wings. The Clippers have tons of wings on their team.
Sure.
And guys that have some length, you know, to go with it. So there are some matchups that would concern me, but when I look at, you know, this possible blueprint, ultimately I would not be too freaked out because you did shoot, what was it, 47% from the field. You shot 40% from three. So they shot the ball well. They shot the ball well last night. What hurt the Kings inevitably was lack of shots. It wasn't the fact that they weren't shooting well. It was that they were not getting enough shots. They had 19 turnovers. We talked about it earlier, Rami. They lost a bunch of 50-50 balls. They were -7 on the rebounding. They were not getting enough shots up to you know, make up for the difference between what was happening out there. So I think you can find a way. Every team has a counter, and we'll get into it a little bit later of how the Kings might be able to counter this. But I do think you hit a key point with the physicality. And that's why when we've talked about it, and you and I have discussed this a lot over the past couple of weeks about what this team should do at the trade deadline, one of the things on top of my list is add that physicality. Bring in a legit big who's physical, who can protect them a little bit, rebound and bang bodies. You need that guy. You also, I would love to see a 3-and-D wing, somebody who has some of that length, some of that athleticism, but somebody that can give you a little bit of push. I know people have mentioned Jay Crowder. He's a name. Vanderbilt is a name that we've talked about.
Those are both names.
Yeah, somebody who can give you the 3-and-D.
Those are both names.
Accurate.
Of people, yes.
That can give you that 3-and-D element, And both guys will bring a little bit of that physicality off of the bench.
It's not, you brought this name up first, and since then I've been all over, and it's my number one target is Mason Plumlee, and he'll do a little bit of that too, and he brings the playmaking on the offensive side of things. But they do need either somebody to step up and be a more physical presence, somebody not named Domantas Sabonis, or they need to go and get somebody, because that bully ball is one of the things that they will fall victim to time and time again. You said it, Nick. They shot fine last night. They just didn't have as many shots, and that's because Toronto had 18 second-chance points.
Yep.
When they're getting extra possessions, they don't even have to shoot at the same clip that you do to be on top and on the right side of the scoreboard at the end of the night.
I would say, too, that the Kings are a little bit fortunate because the way the NBA is played, look, physicality will ramp up when you get closer to the postseason. And when you're playing playoff basketball, physicality will be more emphasized by coaching staffs. But the league is a lot of kind of chuck and duck three ball, right? Like, it's not like you're playing the 80s or the 90s here. There is an overall lack of physicality in the game nowadays. So that kind of helps them. But when they get pushed physically, when other teams impose their will on them, can they respond consistently enough? And if you get into a playoff series against one of these teams that's going to be physical, now you're talking about doing it night in and night out. Seven-game series, man, you've got to meet that level of physicality every single night or you're going to lose that series.
Yeah, if they run into the wrong matchup in the playoffs, that could be trouble. As far as the entire league recreating or modeling what Toronto did last night and it being a problem throughout the regular season, I don't foresee that happening. Because not a lot of teams can do what Toronto was doing last night.
Now, the zone, you got to figure out how to break the zone. You got to figure out how to handle the zone. Because teams will throw the zone at you. That's going to happen from time to time, at least. So that is one issue. By the way, all guests, when they show up here, come to you from the Folsom Lake Honda Hotline. Folsom Lake Honda.
Your one-stop Honda shop.
There we are.
Ready for that one.
There you are.
Your thoughts on the Kings. Are you concerned that the Raptors created a blueprint last night on how to slow this Kings offense down? Also, are the Niners about to lose a critical part of the operation? We'll give you the latest next.
Cattles.
And Rami.
Sactown Sports. The only place you'll find Kevin Herter is Sactown Sports.
Herter's open, steps into three. He's got the triple.
Hey, Sacramento, it's Kevin Herter, and you're listening to the home of the Sacramento Kings, Sactown Sports.
Your local sports leader. Your afternoon home for Kings talk and more.
This is Cattles and Rami
on Sactown Sports.
Frank Armitage, YouTube.com, Sactown Sports 1140. Don't forget to like us. Give us the thumbs up. The more thumbs up, the more eyeballs get to see the content that we are giving you here at Sactown Sports. 12 hours a day, 5 days a week, 6A to 6P. Of course, you got Dave and Jason in the morning. You've got Deuce and Mo in the midday. And then myself and Rami in the afternoon. Frank says, stop using the word physicality so damn much.
You were saying physical a lot.
You used it a few times, too. See, this all sounds good in theory. But as I chatted back to Frank, give me another word. So I actually looked up physicality synonyms.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want me to use animality?
Yes.
Animality, is that good?
I do, actually.
Oh, last night the Raptors showed animality.
Work that in.
A lot of animality last night. Yes. How about carnality?
Oh.
That's
I like it.
Everybody would know exactly what I'm talking about if I said they were playing with some carnality.
I would, but my vocabulary is voluminous, so.
Rami talks for a living.
There's also another synonym, fleshliness.
I don't like that one.
That was gross.
Keep it. Thank you so much.
So, Frank, would you like me to use that one?
That's a synonym for physicality, fleshliness?
Yeah, thesaurus.com.
Really?
Fleshliness.
I've never heard that in my life.
For physicality. Mm.
Just so you know, we had a bet back here as to whether or not Nick would bring this up on air when we came back, and it was first word that he said coming out the break.
Hedonism. How about that?
That's a word for physicality?
I'm going off thesaurus.com. Stop asking me.
Okay.
Same website. I don't know. I didn't create this.
All right. By the way,
animalism. The Raptors showed animalism.
I like that.
I mean, that's what was the second one again? What was the second one you said?
Frank says much better. Really? Frank, you're just saying that now. You just admit. You just admit there's not a lot of synonyms for physicality that work. Not my fault. Let's create a word. If you want to create a word, Frank, please. I'm all for it. I don't like saying the same word over and over again. So
anything but fleshliness, honestly.
Pascal Siakam showed off some versatility.
Tall Chinese guy. Fleshliness is like moist.
Yeah.
Do you like the word moist, Rami?
I don't mind the word moist.
Do you like the word moist?
How else do I describe a good piece of cake?
Well, in that context.
Right?
You all right, Simone? I don't know what that
was. I'm scared right now. I'm scared.
I'm sorry.
That was, she just had like five octaves of a laugh.
Yeah, yeah.
I know.
It's like the Mariah Carey of laughter.
How else do I describe a good piece of cake?
Rami, I'm scared to respond to this one.
I'm just saying.
Then don't. That's the rule. If you're scared to respond, then don't respond at all. So, yeah, not a lot of synonyms. I apologize, Frank, but... Tell Toronto to not play physical, and then we won't have to say the word more than a couple of times. Jumping to football, we will get back to the Kings in a few minutes, but I want to jump to football because a very important situation is playing out for the Niners right now, or maybe you don't think it's important. We're all focused like we should be on the NFC Championship game coming up on Sunday, but D'Amico Ryans, reportedly, from Mike Cleese in Denver, is a top candidate for the Broncos job. Now, Cleese is he's as good as it gets. In Denver. Like, this guy is pretty much the Adam Schefter of Denver. If he says something about the Broncos, you take it to the bank.
Gospel.
So he's saying right now that in that franchise, in those offices, they want D'Amico as their head coach. And the first thing that came to my mind was presidential elections. Because a lot of times,
what?
Yeah. Let's play this out. Okay. I'm going to give you a Colin Cowherd analogy.
All right.
So when you when a lot of times what you see play out with presidential elections over history is a lash out of the current incumbent, and the person who gets voted in the next time around is in a lot of ways the opposite of what you just dealt with, right? People like to go with the polar opposite of what they just dealt with.
Sure.
You could argue that's happening right now in some ways, right? Between the last president and this president. Not to get too political, but they're very opposite, right? In a lot of different ways.
I think people on both sides would agree with you on
so,
that.
So, yes. So when you – so that it's a pretty safe thing to say in this very polarizing –
They would disagree if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but I think both sides would say they are polar opposites.
In
yes.
a very polarizing political world, I might have just hit the gray area.
Yes.
So – When you look at this, if it is D'Amico Ryans, I find it interesting because the last guy failed miserably, and he was Nathaniel Hackett, offensive mind, the guy who was going to work and let Russell Wilson cook and all these things. And the Broncos looked at that and said, well, the offensive guy didn't work, so we're going to go to the polar opposite of who Nathaniel Hackett is with D'Amico Ryans because Hackett isn't like that emotional. Ryans can get a little emotional on the sideline. So they're going for the polar opposite.
Yeah.
But now you look at it from the Niners' perspective, Rami, it gets interesting because I would imagine D'Amico's gone. I'd be shocked if D'Amico, whether it's in Denver or somewhere else.
Unless he doesn't want any of these
Unless it's on his own accord.
Right.
Like Dan Quinn today.
Yeah. Announced he's coming back to Dallas.
Announced he's returning to Dallas. So Dan Quinn wanted nothing to do with the head coaching vacancies. He had some interviews and he said, you know what? Now, it's either he didn't want to have anything to do with it, or he got word he was not going to get the job.
Or maybe
so.
The only job he wanted was Carolina, and Frank Reich
maybe,
got that. Today.
Maybe.
He did two interviews with Arizona.
Yeah, so he's kind of getting ahead of things, right?
Sure.
Like, maybe he knew, or maybe he just doesn't want to be bothered with it.
Sure.
So, D'Amico, I would imagine, unless he doesn't want one of these jobs, is going to be gone. Every time we've talked to people, whether it's stats, I think we talked to Jeff Howe about this. Every time we talked about... Who would be the plan B? Who would be the person that Kyle Shanahan would want to replace D'Amico if D'Amico leaves? And it's been Vic Fangio. Here's the issue with that. Vic Fangio is interviewing all around the country. Like he's had a bunch of interviews the last 2 weeks, which is, it's really the NFL putting the Niners behind the eight ball because the NFL allows these, coordinators to have interviews and play this thing out. But when you're in the middle of a playoff run, it's not like the Niners are going to – you can't replace D'Amico until he's gone.
Right.
And so D'Amico leaves after the season is over, what happens if Vic Fangio, let's say he just interviewed with the Dolphins? What happens if Fangio goes to the Dolphins? What if that was Shanahan's plan B, what's plan C? And to you, does that matter?
I won't say it doesn't matter at all. That's too dismissive of D'Amico Ryans and the job he's done as the defensive coordinator. And you're right. He deserves, if he wants one of these head coaching jobs, he deserves to have one of these head coaching jobs.
100%.
He's been that good. I'm always more worried about the offensive coordinator. I don't know if data would back this up or not, Nick. It'd be a hard thing to look up, to be quite honest with you. My impression is that the offensive coordinator leaving, you can look in Buffalo this year and Brian Daboll leaving and that offense and Josh Allen taking a slight step back in their development, that always seems to have more of an effect, at least in my mind, than the defensive coordinator. I feel like a defensive coordinator can kind of draw it up and leave his thumbprint on a defense, and even after he leaves, the players on that side of the ball sort of know what they're doing and can continue to carry out that plan, even though the defensive coordinator isn't there anymore and it's somebody else technically who's leading the meetings and the film sessions and calling the plays on defense. I'm not too worried about D'Amico Ryans leaving and this defense plummeting after he goes, even if they can't get a Vic Fangio to replace him.
I've got some slight concern for a couple of reasons. D'Amico, I've said this a couple of times this year, D'Amico spins the dial, so to speak, defensively. He just doesn't rely on the talent and almost get lazy. We saw that last weekend with him rolling out the Tampa 2.
Yep.
So he's creative, and he thinks of different ways to challenge offenses. Even though he does have all that talent at all three levels, he still kind of challenges himself and challenges the guys to get more out of it and to throw some wrinkles at teams, which I think is pretty important. He also has shown the ability to adjust. But, you know, the bigger issue to me is the brain drain, as they call it. And there's been a lot of the brain drain from this staff because of how successful San Francisco has been and how many games they've won with Kyle Shanahan.
This is the price of success.
You know, you're losing Mike McDaniel. You're losing Robert Saleh. You're losing now D'Amico Ryans very likely. And
Brian
don't forget,
Greasy. Michigan wants Brian Greasy for their quarterback coach.
And don't forget, like, these guys also usually bring other staff members with them.
Right.
So that's a lot of coaches leaving this staff over the past 3-4 years. And eventually, I do think that'll catch up with you a little bit. So I would see that and have some slight concern. But I also would say to myself, when Saleh left, there were some questions. And you figured it out. You got D'Amico Ryans. So you got to have some faith in Shanahan and John Lynch to be able to find the right answer. But it does tell you, if Fangio was plan B, that tells you that Shanahan and Lynch and the brain trust did not necessarily feel like there was an answer inside.
Right.
Which,
if those reports are true, that they wanted Fangio, if D'Amico Ryans should leave, then yeah, although could it just mean that they'd feel even better with Vic Fangio, the steady hand of Vic Fangio?
I don't know, maybe, but if Fangio's not an option,
because they haven't been shy to go with unexperienced people. Brian Greasy never he was in a TV booth a year ago, and now he's their quarterbacks coach.
Like but quarterbacks coach you can get by because you got Shanahan. Shanahan's worked with quarterbacks his entire career.
Sure,
so you can get by with that. Whether or not he's somebody who would be able to help you defensively. I'll throw a name out there. I don't even know if he's a fit, but Steve Wilks, who was just in the running to be Carolina head coach, did a pretty good job after Matt Rhule left the program. Steve Wilks is a guy very, very respected in the league. So I'm sure Shanahan has his list of names. He's ready. But it's just interesting because Fangio has always been the name that's been brought up, and he might end up going elsewhere. It is 3:25. On this Thursday, Time Check brought to you by Capital Casino, conveniently located on 411 North 16th Street in downtown Sacramento. Rami wants to talk about the Beam and an historic NBA performance last night. We'll talk about it coming up.
Cattles and Rami. Cattles and Rami.
Sactown Sports.
Pull it back, Kobe.
one mile at a time during the afternoon drive. Cattles and Robbie.
Sactown Sports.
Get back to the Kings in a minute, but I just want to tie a bow onto our conversation last segment with the Niners defensive coordinators. I got two more names for you. Okay. Well, actually, one more name. I brought up Steve Wilks, who, for whatever reason, didn't get the Carolina job. That guy's been done so wrong in the league. I know, you know, many people will bring up race as a possibility there with Wilks on as to why he hasn't been able to keep a job or get a job. He was in Arizona with Josh Rosen. And they dumped him to hire Cliff Kingsbury, who had a losing record in college and stunk in Arizona. And this time around, he replaces Matt Rhule, another college coach. Wilks did a really good job.
Almost got him to the playoffs.
With that, did
yeah.
I don't know what else Steve Wilks could have done to earn the head coach job than what he did with Carolina.
And by the way, after they traded Christian McCaffrey, their best player.
Yes. So I would look at Wilks as a possibility. And of course, you know, some of this might be scheme changes and all that. Brian Flores is another name that I would look at. And I'm also going to challenge somebody in the chat, Tony, our friend Tony.
Oh, boy.
Because our guy Tony, all he does is complain, but he doesn't ever come up with solutions. He's just like, oh, no Fangio. And I was like, well, I'm not saying Fangio. Insiders are saying Fangio. Go send an email to Kyle Shanahan and complain. Not on me.
And who do you want?
And I said, Tony? I said Flores and Wilks. And Tony goes, Wilks and Flores. No. Okay, Tony. Then give me this great defensive coordinator name that you want. Give me solutions.
Can't do it.
I'm all ready for a conversation if you can give me at least names to go back and forth on and say, okay, that's a good choice, Tony.
He just said Wilks and Flores. No. He doesn't want them either. Who do you want, man?
And then he gives us the smiling face emoji because he knows that he doesn't have anything.
Habitual line stepper. That's
he's got holla at your
he's
boy.
Habitual line
he
stepper.
He just put up a holla at your boy.
That's what he's doing. He's stepping over.
Anyway, so those are two names that I'd look at, and we'll see what happens. But if I'm a Niners fan, I would absolutely. And I think Niners fans, including Tony, they're mentally prepared to see D'Amico leave. It'd be, like I said last segment, a shock if he doesn't become a head coach. It's well-deserved. Dude has done a great job. Seems like a very, very bright guy, bright coach. Again, spins the dial, comes up with creative solutions to problems, unlike Tony. So if he gets the head coach gig in Denver, good for him. But I think they're mentally prepared for D'Amico to leave. All right, so let's jump to the Kings. Experiencing the beam last weekend was fun for me.
In person, huh?
I had been waiting, right? And it's great, man. Kelly was taking videos of it. I'm taking pictures of it. And when teams start trolling, like when other teams start trolling you about something, you know you've got something.
Yeah.
Right? You know it's catching on across the country. And Hunter Patterson of The Athletic wrote a story about the beam yesterday. And the headline was that the title of the story was More Than a Feel-Good Story or Rallying Cry. You read it. You had some thoughts about how, you know, this beam is just more than a quote-unquote gimmick.
And that's what it started off as, Nick. And some people might even say corny. People outside of – I've seen it on Twitter. People outside of Sacramento calling it corny. I might think it was corny if I was outside of Sacramento. But – I mean, can't we be a little corny when it comes to sports? Like, what?
Yeah,
I think so. Why? This isn't like
not Band-Aid corny. Beam corny. Yeah.
Disagree.
This isn't a religion. This isn't our like your heritage. You know, it's a game. It's entertainment.
I disagree with what you're wearing today.
Let's be a little corny. Someone said he looked like an Easter egg. By the way,
he does.
On the
YouTube
chat.
I got permission to use that in a stand-up comedy set.
Good. Okay. Good. Go ahead and do that. But, I mean, I grew up a Cubs fan, and I don't know how many people are familiar with it. They fly a W over Wrigley Field every time they win.
Yep.
I love that. I actually have a T-shirt that's just a white T-shirt
with the blue W
on it.
Did that at my bar during the World Series in Virginia Beach for my buddy Tim, who's from Chicago. We put the W, we put a big W flag on the back wall of the bar for every game.
Nice.
We brought good juju.
There you go.
They won. Anyway.
Don't the Cubs also sing a song after they win?
Yes, they do. Go Cubs, go. I won't. I'll spare you. Yeah. Actually, singing.
Hey, Chicago, what do you say?
No, let's not do it. Kyle just said, let's not do it, and that's corny. That song's corny as corny gets. All right, but also, I think sports can be. Maybe I'm overstating things. Maybe I'm romanticizing or glorifying because I'm a huge sports fan or whatever the case might be. I think sports can be something that like brings a community together, galvanizes, even has actual impact on a community and a positive one at that. And they talked to some business owners in the area in Doco. And the one that jumped out to me, because I went into this comic shop and I talked to this dude and he's doing a pretty good thing. And they quote him in the article, Brent Sands of Impound Comics, who's now selling Beam t-shirts. And he says it's kind of become a thing that we're usually more sold out than stocked. So we're always ordering new ones. There are people who walk in now that may not have walked in before. They see the Light the Beam shirts through the window and they'll come in and we'll explain to them what we actually are. I think that's a really cool thing, man. I came here from Milwaukee and I can tell you Milwaukee's downtown kind of not the greatest place to be and not a lot to do before the Bucks built what they built down there and both off the court and on the court. And it became like a place, a gathering place for people and not even just for Bucks games anymore, but for a lot that goes on in that city. I think the Kings have the opportunity and along with the Beam have the opportunity to do something really similar and have a real impact on this city.
I would agree with you. I think the Beam's fantastic. And again, I was super psyched to see it happen on Friday night.
Did you
last
catch
weekend.
It go up live?
No. By the time we got
I
out
missed
there,
that. Was, yeah. I went out there just to see it. And then my dumbass was looking down at my phone when the Beam went up.
Yeah, I think I don't remember seeing it actually like happen.
I haven't seen it happen.
Meanwhile, speaking of a special experience, Dame Dalla last night, 67-8. So 60 points, 7 rebounds, 8 dimes against the Jazz. He shot 21 of 29 from the floor. He shot 9 of 15 from 3. Here he was in the postgame.
I think anytime you score 60 points, it's special. But I think this one, I just felt like, it came pretty simple. It was just different because it felt so simple. You know, I didn't feel like I just went out there and just went after it. You know, it was like taking what they gave me. You know, I was just putting energy into the right places. You know, I felt like I was making the right passes. I was attacking the gaps. They was in the drop defense. I was taking the threes.
It was simple. If people think he's just like kind of being braggadocio. No, it was simple. He needed just 29 shots again, 10 free throw attempts. Just two other players, Carmelo and James Harden, have reached 60 points on fewer shot attempts. He's only one player to score 60 points. Rick Barry in 1974 has done so with fewer than 10 free throw attempts. His true shooting percentage last night was almost 90, which is the highest ever in a 60-point game. It's insane. It's absolutely insane. 72% overall from the field, sixth best in a 60-point game. He's just the fifth player in NBA history to score 60 points at least 4 times, joining a group that includes Wilt Chamberlain, Kobe Bryant, James Harden, and Michael Jordan.
It's amazing. That dude is just... That guy's box office. And I'm not going to say I want to see him get out of Portland because I hate it when people do that.
He should be a king.
I know.
Wanted to be a king.
I understand.
No Thomas
need,
Robinson.
No need to pour salt in that wound, Nick. But whether it be in Portland or elsewhere, I want to see Dame Dalla get a real shot at winning a championship. I want to see that guy on the biggest stage and on the biggest platform.
Well, he's had the opportunity to leave, and he wants to stay.
I know.
So it's on him. He's like Mike Trout, man. I don't feel bad for Mike Trout. You could leave.
Go look at Damian Lillard's contract. He's making $63 million next year.
I mean, that part of his life is pretty great.
Yeah,
it's
not
a bad deal.
But we're talking championships. We're not talking money.
I'm talking about for my entertainment purposes.
Financially, it's
I want to see him play in some bigger games.
But he wants to stay. He wants to stay.
Good for him.
So if he's happy, he's happy.
Wherever you're happy, Dame, you do you.
But
man,
it would be great to see him make the ultimate run. It really would. 3:40 on this Thursday. Time check brought to you by Capital Casino, conveniently located 411 North 16th Street in downtown Sacramento. Up next is an elite NFL quarterback closer to leaving town.
Sactown Sport. Cattles and Robbie.
Cattles and Robbie. Cattles and
Robbie. Sactown Sports.
It's It's been 3 years since Kobe died. Three. It's crazy.
Seems like longer, to be honest.
You think so?
Yeah.
So I don't know if I told this story here in Sacramento, but I actually was hosting ESPN Radio that day.
Oh, you did tell me this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was the guy that right when it happened, I was hosting ESPN Radio National. It was a Sunday. Because I had to fly later that day down to Miami for the Super Bowl because Radio Row was down in Miami. So I was doing the – I'm trying to remember what time it was. I think it was like the 1 to 4 show or something like that. I was doing early afternoon show on a Sunday for ESPN. And talk about just
– shell shock.
A weird situation to be plopped into.
Yeah.
Because just to give people – a peek behind the curtain. ESPN is very, very hesitant, and they should be, to go with any gigantic news like that until their people confirm it. So I was hosting the show. It was pretty nuts. I was hosting the show, and everybody saw it. TMZ had it.
Mm-hmm.
And Twitter was just – everybody was all over it. And I'm hosting the show at the time. I think I was doing the show with was it Mike Wells? But I was doing the show, and we're all seeing it, and we weren't allowed to talk about it until Woj and others confirmed it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because ESPN was not going to go to it and talk about it until, again, their people had it confirmed, because we're talking about the death of Kobe Bryant. So we had to wait, which was a very strange thing, because people are tweeting us, they're texting us, they're like, you guys know what's going on? And I remember it like yesterday. It's like we were talking about the NFL. We're talking about like Russell Wilson and quarterback play or something. And so in the back of your head, you're watching all of this happen, and you know what happened.
Right.
But you're talking about something completely
different. Something else, right.
When you know everybody is going, guys, Kobe died. And so we had to wait. So we finally got the okay. Woj confirmed it, and I think Ramona confirmed it. And once we got it confirmed, we were able to roll with it. But that was a challenging day, to say the least, and a memorable day.
I think it was a hard thing to wrap your head around at first. You know
absolutely.
What I mean? I think a lot of us are waiting for confirmation.
Shell-shocked is the right word.
Not even from like a journalistic standpoint. I think people anybody who saw the news was waiting for some kind of – well, actually not waiting for confirmation, waiting for somebody – for a correction. You know what I mean? Somebody go, wait.
Hoping for a correction.
Exactly.
And saying, no, this can't be it. But it was definitely one of those days for a lot of people, man. And, you know, it will be remembered. And a lot of people, I think, at that time who were, you know, anti-Kobe from a basketball standpoint and, you know, from his past as well, some of the stuff that popped up.
Sure.
You know, you kind of looked at that and saw the impact he had on the game. And just that his impact on the game was just – You still see all these young players saying how he would talk to them and he would give them advice and all that stuff. So I just immediately go back to doing that show and telling the radio world that Kobe had passed. It was very surreal. It was a very surreal day. But RIP to Kobe and his, of course, we always talk about Kobe, and I almost feel like it's, you know, it's an unfortunate thing that, you know, other people were involved, including, you know, Gigi and, you know, the Altabellis, the Chesters, and Christina Mauser, and Ara Zubayan, who was the pilot. You know, think about those people as well, especially Gigi lost her young life, which is just absolutely brutal.
Yeah.
But just wanted to bring that up today because I know a lot of people are talking about it on Twitter, and it's the 3 year anniversary of Kobe's death. So I'll remember sitting in like Miami and watching the TNT coverage when they had they were sitting on the floor in LA. Remember that?
Yeah.
And Shaq broke down and all that was very emotional. I was in that establishment after doing one of those Radio Row shows down in Miami, and Kelly and I went out to grab a bite to eat, and we were just watching it and seeing Shaq break down. That was very, very emotional. So Just wanted to pass that along on the three-year anniversary. Cattles and Rami here, Sacktown Sports on a Thursday. Let's get back to football, Rami. The Jets have hired Nathaniel Hackett as their offensive coordinator. This is a reminder that there's always a job waiting for in the NFL for some coaches.
Except Steve Wilkes.
You know, Wilkes will get a job. Hackett did everything wrong in Denver, failed miserably, but there's a difference. I always talk about it. Assistant coaches, coordinators versus being a head coach.
I think people chuckle at that and just assume now because of the way things went as a head coach in Denver, he must be a terrible coach and he should be out of football. But yeah, man, some guys are head coach material. Some guys are destined to be, you know, an assistant or part of a staff.
Yep.
And I personally, you know, Nick, I talk Packers every day for a large chunk of my career. I think Nathaniel Hackett's a pretty good offensive. Yes, he had Aaron Rodgers to work with. Yes, Matt LaFleur called the plays. I think Nathaniel Hackett has a place in the NFL. I don't think this is a crazy, bad, stupid hire.
You know, when you look at – that's like – look, we could talk about D'Amico Ryans. He has earned the opportunity to be a head coach. He could end up being great. He could fail miserably.
He might be really bad at it.
There's a chance
he could be really bad at it.
We've seen that happen a lot where, you know, a stud assistant coach in the NBA or a stud coordinator in the NFL moves on to their next gig and it doesn't work out. So it doesn't mean if you're a great coordinator or coach, doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be a great head coach, a leader of the program. But so Hackett has a new gig in New York, and here was his coaching confidant, coaching friend, and now co-worker and head coach, I guess his boss as well, Robert Saleh.
Nathaniel, he's one of the great strengths is that he is a West Coast guy with regards to scheme. So there's going to be some continuity there. He's got a proven history of being able to develop a heck of a run game in every stop that he's ever been in. He's got a proven track record of tremendous relationships with all the quarterbacks that he's ever worked with. And he's gotten great head success with all the quarterbacks that he's worked with.
All the quarterbacks that he's worked with?
How'd the whole Russell thing go?
That's one of the quarterbacks that he worked with, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Didn't go well.
No, that did not go well.
He let Russ cook.
I shouldn't put this on Robert Saleh.
The meal was terrible.
Do coaches and people who talk into microphones, politicians on a regular basis, do they not know that we have eyes and ears and memories and, like, we've seen these? Like, what do you mean
he's I don't think so.
He thought he could get away with that? I'm not here to bash Nathaniel Hackett or say he shouldn't have got, but to say he's had great success with every quarterback he's worked with, and we just watched what happened with Russell Wilson in Denver, is a little bit ridiculous.
He also coached Blake Bortles for 2 years.
That's probably not something you want on your resume.
More of a Blake problem, though, I would say, than a Hackett problem.
Yeah.
And, of course, because of Hackett, you mentioned it, Rami, his experience in Green Bay, his experience with Aaron Rodgers. People were talking about, maybe Rodgers is going to Denver when Hackett went to Denver last year. Now people are wondering, will Rodgers end up with the Jets? The Jets are desperate for a quarterback. And Saleh, as you heard, has talked about that and talked about adding a veteran quarterback. Rodgers goes to the Jets. That team could be dangerous.
Yeah, they could.
They've got talent. They've got talent on both sides of the football. Rodgers could make that team a serious threat in the AFC next year. So we'll see if that all comes together. But it's the obvious go-to when we see, you know, Hackett be brought in. It could not be. It wasn't the case in Denver. Maybe it's just Saleh likes Hackett.
Was it not the case in Denver, or was that the plan in Denver and it didn't come to fruition?
I don't know.
I think that was the plan in Denver and it did not come to fruition.
I do not have an inside look on
that.
Total
speculation.
I don't have
sources. Denver forgot to check if he was capable of clock management.
I don't have so one of the best things this year was when the Denver crowd was literally counting down the play clock so Hackett and the offense could run a play without the time expiring.
God, that got
it's one
bad.
One of the greatest things ever.
That got so bad.
That was like week four. It's like it's like the beginning of the year.
The Seattle game was literally week one. Week one was when he blew it, and then after that, everyone was like, "Yeah, not good."
And they were on national TV like 10 times this year. I'm not exaggerating. The Broncos were on national TV, I think, 9 or 10 times this year.
Yeah, someone with the networks thought Russell Wilson was going to be good.
Thought he was going to cook.
Pride of UC Davis, Nathaniel Hackett,
and that backfired tremendously.